In chapter 10, the one chapter we've always skipped over, to explain just a few things. I'm assuming here that some of you brethren have perhaps a little more understanding and grasp of the basic subject of the book of Revelation than I might expect in just every area of the world. At least you leave me with the impression of being essentially a proper scholarly audience in general. Now, we know in simple terms that the book of Revelation was given by God the Father through Jesus Christ, and it was his privilege, because of what he had accomplished on earth, to make it known to the church, to the Apostle John, when John was a prisoner on the island of Patmos. And it begins by giving seven separate letters that were to accompany the revelation. Now, normally you gave a letter to a group and you read the letter. That was the message that goes to the group, and it tells you about what's to follow. That is the revelation. Now, in this case, instead of having seven separate letters and a book of Revelation, they're all put together as one, which may be significant in terms of the total unity. There is a message to the church from Christ, and then seven separate messages that were given to seven churches that lay along the normal commercial mail route of Western Asia Minor. Now, God could have sent the book of Revelation directly to the churches in Achaia, Greece, or in Italy, or in Palestine or Syria, whatever he might have wanted to do. Maybe not Palestine by then, because it was so late in the 90s AD. But in any case, it got to everybody, and it has even gotten to Long Beach. But there was no direct message for Long Beach, except that you were told to heed what the Spirit says to the churches. Therefore, in a sense, we recognize that all the messages to the seven churches have something for us. But we also have recognized that the reason they are given in the order that they are is that they also tell something of the nature of the church through time. And that is that the work throughout history has varied in its impact. Now, since it has varied in its impact, there is, in that sense, a historical difference as we move through time to the nature of the work of the church and the problems that beset the church. Sometimes there may be, as we found in the 1920s, early 1930s, and previously for many centuries, not a powerful voice, but a very weak voice by normal standards. Time magazine is speaking of the World Tomorrow broadcast, and Mr. Herbert Armstrong some years ago spoke of him as thundering the Word of God. I think Time magazine chose very appropriate terms. What we now know is that after the seven letters are organized here to convey a general message to each one of the congregations, all of which have these problems listed there, and all existed at the same time, therefore any of us should pay attention, because it might be true of us or true of groups of us. Yet there is no doubt when you read the story that you move in time from beginning to end to a time of persecution after the original apostles, the time when God opens doors worldwide following a basic dearth of the Word of God, to the last period when the church is pictured as neither hot water in winter or cold water in summer, but just lukewarm, for the simple reason that generally reflects the state of mind of the ho-hum world around us, more interested in the Joneses and crises, more interested in the pleasures and the responsibilities, more interested in self while Christ stands at the door and knocks. You know the whole picture. Now, after that description, we have the actual revelation, which comes in simple outline form. It's on a scroll. Now, the scroll, of course, is not something that John read while he was on the island of Patmos. There was a vision that he had, and I'm summarizing this, and a vision he thought, and his whole mind came to the realization that he would almost have to be spirit to see what he was seeing. And so it was like he was composed of spirit on the Lord's day in the presence of God's throne in heaven. Now, as far as we are told and everything we know, John in actuality was in a trance. I have never had such an experience. I have dreams, and I suppose most of you call dreams. Some are vivid, some are vague. Then there are the rest of it. John, anyway, couldn't account for what he saw. It was so real. Any other way than to describe himself as he looked on the situation, it's like seeing himself in spirit, in a vision, on the Lord's day, and there we are seeing Christ being given a scroll and opening the seal that held the scroll. Normally, one seal on a string, something like this, would have been sufficient. Now, this is not a scroll. This is a codex. But with a scroll, in this case, apparently different sections were wound around as the final outside part of the scroll was closed. The last one was put around the seal, so that in actuality, it was presented in such a way that the last seal which was put on the scroll would have had to have been the first seal that you opened. It's the only way that I could see seven seals, since each one was opened at a seventh separate time. Now, once this was given to Christ, he opened it, and in this case, there wasn't something written in Hebrew or Greek as far as we know. There was a scroll, and John was not told divine language or angelic languages that might be on here. In this scroll, he didn't even copy what was on it. He was told to write what he saw, what he heard. Now, what he saw and heard was visually, in his vision, what was taking place in God's presence that, in fact, corresponded to what was written on the scroll. In other words, when we are told the first, and I will now turn to the beginning of the actual opening of the scroll. Now, when the Lamb opened one of the seals, that's seal number one actually, I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." Now, thunder is often what happens here when someone speaks, because it seems to be that, and yet it has actual meaning. Thunder is sometimes used to describe an event in the New Testament when God spoke to Christ. It was thunder to those around who didn't understand, and there were clear words to those who did. That is a miracle in the hearing. He says, "Come and see," and I saw, and behold, a white horse. And he sees something. Now, John does not read the scroll. There's no reason to believe that God was limited either to Hebrew or Greek. There's no reason to think that any mortal language among men is capable of defining all the things. So, in this case, it was something from the Father to the Son. What John was asked to do then was to write down in his own words what he either hears or to describe what he sees. And so we know from previous description in our literature that we've given, I won't go into that, that there were seven seals. And when the seventh seal was opened, there sound seven trumpets. And when the seventh trumpet sounds, there are seven vials that are poured out or placed. So it's like having a string of seven, the last of which has seven parts, and each of these, the last of which has seven parts. I won't go into that further. We're not here explaining most of the book. Now, we note that seals on the scroll were opened, and one thing after another happened, so that you have a historical development of world events from the time of the close of the first century. From the time of the close of the first century to a period when there is divine intervention in the heavens. Now you will note that seals 1 through 6 are opened all in the 6th chapter. So you see how much of history is condensed in the 6th chapter. The 6th seal is opened in verse 12. And there was a great earthquake, and events took place in the heavens. And now the day of God's wrath has come, and who is able to stand is the way it ends. Chapter 6, verse 17. So it takes us through the whole of history, the tribulation of the Middle Ages, which I will define in a moment, the final tribulation, the crisis at the close, and ready for the day of the Lord. I want you to think about something here. As we move through the book, we also were told in the literature we've published, and I want to show you again so we don't take anything for granted, that there are inset chapters. Now, there was one man in the ministry in the state of Oregon who caused great damage in our Medford church, who came up with the idea. Mr. McNair, Dennis Pyle, and I both went up. I went up twice. One of them went up once. Together we were. And we explained to the brethren, we tried to explain to him something very simple. That after chapter 6, all the rest of the chapters do not follow in successive time order. That is, that there are sometimes historical insets to fill in a story. In reality, the history of the seven churches described in Revelation 2 and 3 is a church view of history. Then chapter 6 of the book of Revelation, now this is the part of the scroll, is a world's eye view of what takes place from the first century A.D. till this 20th century. It's a general view of the running of events. Now, there are certain things we know to be insets. Now, we take a note of the fact that the 6th seal is opened in chapter 6. But what we want to know is when the 7th seal is opened. So, we're told in verse 7th seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. This is because God's intervention is going to take place, and the angels are, of course, quite aware that by this time God is angry in the way he has never been before. You don't approach God for little things when he's angry. Let's just be plain. You don't approach anybody when he's angry, you know. Story about the boss and every little sign. Cloudy today, ask your questions with care, or, you know, little things that bosses put on the desk. I don't have any such things. I know that some do. They have their little sayings. My daughter has one that does certainly fit her. Not this one, the other daughter. Now, we then ask the question, if chapter 6, verse 12, and succeeding verses bring us to the close of the 6th seal, and we don't find the 7th seal open until chapter 8, verse 1, then we want to look at the verses 1 to 17 in chapter 7. Now, the chapterization of any part of the Bible is done by men. And therefore, we note that we should not assume that the chapters alone tell everything. Now, what happens is that the 6th seal pictures the heavens departing as a scroll, 6:14. The day of God's wrath has come. And then we're told in chapter 7 that there are four angels who are now asked to restrain themselves till certain things occur. And the implication, of course, is that these come out of great tribulation, verse 14 of chapter 7. So what we see in chapter 7 is not an inset, in the sense that we shall explain later, but a delay, if you please, of events being carried on any further. That is, after the opening of the sixth seal and the day of God's wrath has come, you would have expected chapter 8 immediately to follow. But chapter 7 is the statement of God postponing his action briefly while a certain number of people are yet to be, let's say, given the Spirit of God, 12,000 of each of 12 tribes of Israel, and a great multitude. I will not explain these further. It is not my conviction that these are the stories of the churches through history. These certainly seem to be, both of them, individuals who come out of great tribulation. That is the great tribulation. Who have washed their robes, that is, their sins have been washed away, figuratively speaking there, through the forgiveness that Christ makes possible, described in verse 14. And they are pictured ultimately, you see, in what happens to them, as neither hungering nor thirsting anymore, because they are ultimately to be composed of spirit. Verse 16. Neither shall the sun light on them nor any heat. Now it lights on you, because you're mortal flesh. But when your spirit, it will not. So this is, in a sense, looking ahead. It's getting ahead of the story, but showing that God does something with a group of people. Now, there were 14 people called for the apostles, and there were 70 others, apparently, and altogether 120. And out of the 14, 12 were chosen. So here, out of a great many who were called, there are 12,000 of each of the tribes, and many more of these tribes, that made up the great multitude of all nations. Because if you have them of all nations, you also have them of 12 tribes. That ought to be clear. God doesn't say, well, I'm only going to call 12,000 of the tribe of Asher, and all 12,000 have to make it. But he's calling for 12,000, and he's calling more than 12, and the rest are in the great multitude. Now, they have a special function. There are 12 apostles ruling over the 12 tribes, so I assume, in actuality, these 12 have a separate role of consequence to play in the world tomorrow. And then you have the great multitude. And these represent individuals that have not been called till now, not even called now, as I would grasp the picture, that is, called to have the Spirit of God. God may be calling them in a sense, but they will not have the Spirit of God. It's difficult to understand that in any other way than in verse 2 of chapter 7. Having the seal of the living God, that's what preserves them. Therefore, they must have the Spirit of God, and they're not really pictured as being converted until after the tribulation. And that's yet to come. So it isn't that the Church of God, the worldwide Church of God, has to be 144,000. And certainly, I think it has nothing to do with any other group. Jehovah's Witnesses like to think that there have been 144,000 AD among them. That is their own doctrine, not the church. The time setting makes it clear. The sixth seal hasn't yet been opened. In fact, the fifth seal was opened once, historically. Now, of course, they've all been opened in the sense that Christ did and had it written here, but in terms of events, that is, the events pertaining to them, have only come through the fifth seal, and the sixth one has not yet been fulfilled, and certainly not the seventh. Now, after we have this indication that we're dealing with a group of individuals whom God is calling, then we discover the day of the Lord is dealt with in chapter 8. The seventh seal is opened, the seven angels which stand before God now have seven trumpets, and these trumpets represent terrible events that represent the period of time of God's intervention. They had seven trumpets and prepared themselves to sound in verse 6. Now, we suddenly discover in chapter 8 the number that sounds. Now, notice how fast they do. Chapter 8, verse 7, the first angel sounds. Verse 8, the second. Verse 10, the third one. See? Goes right down. Verse 11, the fourth one. And we've come to all the introductory ones. Then we come to the last three trumpet sounds, which are terrible woes, but we're told that the fifth one sounded in chapter 9, verse 1, and the sixth one sounded in chapter 9, verse 14, and terrible events occurred on earth. This is not the time to explain them, but it's all referring to the time of divine intervention. When God is going to allow nations to punish each other, and he's going to punish the earth for its behavior. Now, our question is this. Heretofore, we have assumed that chapter 11, which talks of the two witnesses, is an inset chapter, as is number 12, as is number 13, and certainly number 17. And if you please, the general picture of 18. But all those are inset chapters, and we've assumed up to this time that chapter 10 is not an inset chapter, but it's a continuation of chapter 9. I think I have explained this very simply. This has been the assumption. Now we're told here in verse 2 that there is a little book in the hand of an angel. He cries with a loud voice, as when a lion roars, and when he cries, seven thunders utter their voices. And John was about to write what he heard the thunders say, and he was told to seal them up, and because it's written in that fashion, we have just simply said, well, all that is just for the day of the Lord. And so we start out with the first inset chapter in number 11. And there was given me a reed like a rod, and the angel stood saying, rise and measure the temple of God. Because we do know that chapter 11 contains inset material, as also the 12 and 13, for the simple reason that you're dealing with two witnesses, chapter 11, who after being dead for 3.5 days, after being in the ministry speaking during a time of great crisis for 3.5 years, they rise at the time that the seventh angel sounds the trumpet. That's the day of the Lord's climax when Christ returns. And we know that the trumpets that are sounding in chapters 8 and 9 are already in the day of the Lord. So there's every reason to conclude that the tribulation and the crisis described in chapter 11 takes us back. So we know that the material in chapter 11 is inset. The question is, what do you do with 10? See? You want to look at it. Because if we had known what was in chapter 10, we would never have misunderstood events or 1972. Nor would we have misunderstood the state of the church today. But we assumed before 1972 that the promises made to the church that is described there as the congregation of Philadelphia, you know, there were seven churches, and the next to the last one was located in the city of Philadelphia, or brotherly love in Asia Minor. And we assume that when God said he'd open a door, no man would shut, he'd shut a door, no man would open. When we looked at all that, we took for granted for years that the work of the Philadelphia congregation in Asia Minor, which was typical of this period that we were going through in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, into the 70s, would finish the work, see? And therefore, we assume that the people who didn't really do their part, whether among us or somewhere else whom God should choose to call, were like those of Laodicea, and that they would be during the tribulation, going through it while God's people, who were promised a place of protection, that is the congregation of Philadelphia, was told that God would protect them from the crisis that would come, that since the tribulation would parallel the congregation, Laodicea, that the Philadelphia era of God's church, so to speak, would finish the work, and that the 10th chapter of the book of Revelation follows, it's in the day of the Lord, and the first inset is chapter 11. But now we want to take a look at chapter 10 to see if it really says what we thought it did in terms of the rest of the events. Now, before we go further, let me point out that verse 7 of chapter 10 says, "But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished," as he declared to his servant the prophet. That is what it's all about, God calling individuals here and there while the world goes its merry way. In the days of the voice of the seventh angel when he begins to sound. Now you want to know where that seventh angel sound? This is given in chapter 11, verse 15, at the death of the two witnesses and the time they come to life again. "And there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." Now at the time, verse 18, "when the nations are angry, when God's wrath has come, at the time of the nations that they should be judged." King James Version translates an incorrect text. It's not the time of the dead that they should be judged. The church of God is being judged today, and the rest of the dead don't live again till 1,000 years are finished. The Greek word is not nekros, from which this translation is made. It's ethnos, which means nation. It's the time that the nation should be judged, and that you should give reward to your servants, the prophets, and the saints. Destroy those which destroy the earth. Now, that's where the seventh angel sounds the trumpet. But what we now want to note, before we go back to events in chapter 10 and 11, we want to go on and see what we have. So let's, for the moment, say that we're going to save our real question to the end, and we're going to look at events in chapter 12 and see what a true inset is. Now in chapter 12, we are told, "There appeared a great wonder in heaven." Now, is this after the seventh trumpet sound? Well, in the time element, as John sees it, it is true. And this man in Oregon claimed that chapter 12 follows and is a part of the day of the Lord, the return of Christ, which is the same as saying that Jesus has yet been born. Because here, Laodicea first came to be delivered. Now there was also another wonder, a great red dragon. The woman had a child to be delivered, and the dragon sought to devour the child as soon as it was born. Verse 4. Now she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. Her child was caught to God, to his throne. That's Jesus Christ, it's not the church. The woman herself is the church, the congregation. And Christ was born out of the congregation of Israel. Now the woman is on earth because she flees to the wilderness. Now, she is pictured as having her origin in heaven, because the church itself was called by God who is in heaven. And of course, everything is seen as an event that takes place in heaven, or John may look at the earth from his position before God's throne in heaven. But now we know that the woman is given the chance to flee to the wilderness. This is the tribulation of the Middle Ages. Now we're told in chapter 12, verse 7, there is war in heaven, and the dragon speaks here to persecute the woman, verse 13, he persecuted the woman and brought forth a child. And the woman was given an opportunity again to escape to a wilderness. Therefore, we perceive, you see, that this whole chapter 12 is clearly an incest. Now, the fifth seal that was opened in chapter 6 is the story of the tribulation. And after that, no true heavenly signs of the proportion that we expect have ever occurred. Therefore, there's no true, complete fulfillment of the sixth seal. There may have been a partial one in the 1830s, but no true fulfillment. Now, what often happens is that prophecies are dual. There's the long-range event, and then there's the repetition. Now, after you have the false teachers, the wars, the famine, pestilence, tribulation, then you have again, in the 16th century, a repetition of the whole thing. You have, again, a whole host of false teachers going out into the world. We know this is the Protestant Reformation, just like the first one gave rise to the Catholic Church of God, which is its original title. And now we have the so-called Reformed Catholic churches that we call Protestants. Those who came out and mothered and protested. That's the beginning of the second cycle. Then you had the wars that continued, and we're headed for a final time of famine and tribulation, which is, of course, there long too. So that we're going to see a repetition of what happened before. Great famine in times past, the tribulation. The famines are only now beginning. The wars are going on. And often when something starts and continues, the false teachers continue to do their work. Then the wars come along and continue. And there isn't any question but what modern warfare differs. And so there is a true cycle of modern warfare that has differed from the warfare of the past. And there's coming a time of famine that differs from the past. Reason? Because of overpopulation. There was a time when famine had to be very severe to affect the people. Now it doesn't, for the simple reason that there's so many people that even a halfway production will have nearly everybody starving. So we are in a different kind of crisis. It's a compounding of the crisis and a kind of dual repetition, you see. A duality, a repetition, I often say. Mr. Armstrong has commented very commonly on the fact that the prophecies are often dual. There was an original fulfillment, there'll be another one. Anyway, there's no question that chapter 12 is an inset, and you have the tribulation. And then the devil goes to make war with a remnant, those who are not counted worthy to escape, verse 17. But I want you to focus in on chapter 12, verse 1, how an incident has been produced. Now there appears a great wonder in heaven. This is the way an incident is introduced. Now, in chapter 13, remember, we've come to the end here, literally, of the story. There's no question that they had the right division.
Now, there may be a better translation than here. John sees, at this point, on the sand of the sea, a beast rising up out of the earth. And this is something remarkable. We're told also in the 13th chapter something else, verse 11. I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. So, in reality, chapter 13 has two events. The question now is, are these two events after the day of the Lord has already reached its conclusion? Well, our man in Oregon said that chapter 13 must represent something that will happen after the day of the Lord has occurred, which was, of course, nonsense. John sees certain events. Let me tell you now what he's going through. After he's brought us to the day of the Lord and then the crisis during that time, chapter 12 is an overview of the church, not during the time of the seven churches, but during the whole time from the beginning of Jacob's family till the conclusion. It includes the story from Jacob to the birth of Jesus, from the birth of Jesus to the tribulation, and then to the final tribulation. That, in other words, is an overview of the church on a broader plane than merely the seven churches, because in reality the seven churches are not a part of the seals anyway, not a part of the scroll. They preceded. There's seven letters addressed to people who received the scroll's information. But in developing the history of the world, all the scrolls, you have the story of world events during the seals and an inset telling us of the history of the church through over 3,000, well, about 3,700 years back to the time of Jacob. Now in chapter 13, you have a story that gives a summary of the political power that the devil worked through. Chapter 13, verses 1 through 9. The political power. We have explained this in the book of Who's the Beast. In other words, you see the devil is pictured in chapter 12 as having seven heads and 10 horns. That doesn't mean anything until you realize that picturing the political power through which he operates, and now you're introduced to it. And this political power is an inset telling us not what's going to happen after the day of the Lord, but what instrument the devil has been using all along during the time that the first six seals and the seventh one have been opened. And then in chapter 13 is another inset, beginning with verse 11. This is another beast coming up out of the earth. And this is the story of the religious institution that is established by the man who is pictured as riding that first horse, the pale one. So chapters 12 and 13 are insets without any question. Chapter 14 gets back to the theme and pictures the relationship of the saints to Christ. That's really a continuation of what had been before. Chapter 15 now begins to give the setting of the last plagues, which are, in a sense, the conclusion of the trumpet, the seventh trumpet that blows. And in chapter 16, we have six angels sounding. There are seven in all, and the sixth one sounds by verse 12. Sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates. So now we have the story continuing. And then the seventh angel in verse 17. And it's all over. But now we come to chapter 17. Now there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and he talked with me and said, come hither, I will show you the judgment of this great prostitute that sits upon many waters. And so he carried me in the spirit into the wilderness. And here John sees something remarkable. He not only sees the final conclusion, but he sees the whole story. This is again another insight, because it takes us back through the history of this religious institution. Now, chapter 13, the last half, has reference to the institution in terms of its leaders, in terms of its leaders. That is the office, Pope. Chapter 17 is in terms of the church itself. The woman, that is the whole thing. The system that we call the papacy, which has reference to everybody who has participated in it at high or low levels of government. And then we discover that this woman is on an animal, which is, of course, again, an insect telling the story of the political relationship this woman has with the revived Roman Empire in Europe. So all of this, you see, is a kind of parallelism to tell you of the political power, the religious power, and individuals who exercise responsibility that parallel the events that are unfolded when the six seals are opened. The insects are, in a sense, then parallel to some part of history. Now, they are always significantly introduced. Now, the conclusion, of course, we have the going back in time again. After these things, chapter 18, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lighted with his glory. And then you have an insight pertaining to the economic structure, which is now for the first time laid very clear. The economic structure, all those who mourn, who have been participating in this system. And the judgment in chapter 19. And then, of course, the imprisonment of the devil, and this follows. Now you're climaxing in how it's all going to work out. And I won't go further, because you are looking forward to things beyond new heavens and the new earth. But we want to be sure that as we go through here, we have recognized something very fundamental. There is an angel who comes down, who is introduced in a remarkable fashion, or there is an unusual vision of someone or something. Now, I want you to take note, again, of chapter 12. There appeared a great wonder in heaven, verse 1, and compare it now with chapter 11, verse 1. Chapter 11, verse 1, it says, there was given me a reed like a rod, and the angel stood saying, rise, measure the temple. Now, if you look carefully, chapter 11, verse 1, is not a true introduction of an insect. It just says, there was given me a reed like a rod. That's the middle of a story, brethren. The inset begins with chapter 10, not chapter 11. Chapter 10 is not a part of some future day of the Lord. It is the introduction and therefore precedes chapter 11 historically. It is not that which follows chapter 9 in time sequence, any more than chapter 11 follows 9 in time sequence. Now we note chapter 10, verse 1. After the sixth angel fell, here's what we read. And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head. His face may be compared to the sun, feet as pillars of fire. This is indeed an insect, because it is not a part of the sequence of the six angels and the seven. You see, the six angels are already there. Also sounds in chapter 11, but this is another angel, not one of the seven, and is introducing something before we get to the seventh. And the introduction is not a part of this period of time, but takes us back Now, I want you to note what happens, and then we will see the meaning. Now, he had in his hand a little book open, and he set his right hand upon the sea and his left hand upon the earth. This was a big angel. Or else, it's a little earth. And he cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roars. Now, it isn't necessarily this with all of you, but I do happen to have that little book. It's the Bible. This is not the book of life, because it doesn't say it's the book of life. In fact, you don't eat the book of life, but I'm going to show you that it's eaten. Now, man is not to live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. You're to live as much by this book. This is that book. Now, when this angel cried aloud, there were seven thunders, which God hears, and they apparently conveyed messages to his ears, and he said, I was about to write, and then he hears a voice from heaven saying, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and don't write them. That's all it said. And we've been looking for the messages of the seven thunders as if it is a future event. Now let's go on, because nothing more is said at this point. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven and swore by him that lives forever and ever who created heaven and everything else, that at the close of verse 6, there should be time no longer, or better translated, there should no longer be a delay. That is, there is a delay. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, so this angel is not the seventh one, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished. So there has been delay between the time of events that have been described and the seventh angel. I think that's significant. There has been a delay. Now, when the seventh angel sounds, there is no longer a delay. It's over. But there has been a period of time. Now, we want to ask, what are those seven thunders? Now, remember, they are heard, certainly heard, prior to the seventh angel. But the question is, are they heard all after the sixth angel? The answer, of course, we shall see is no. Because this is an inset which hasn't yet come to the two witnesses. And the two witnesses speak long before the trumpet sounds. But let's go on. After the seventh thunders, we are told that when the seventh angel sounds, there's no longer a delay. But the seventh angel doesn't sound. So there's a period of time during which there's a delay. Time is, however, running out. Now the voice which I heard from heaven spoke to me again. Oh, the voice spoke and said, don't write certain things. Now a voice is saying, go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel, which stands upon the sea and upon the earth. So the angel spoke. He had this little book. There were seven thunders. He was told not to write those things. Now there's a reason. Then he's told, again, to take the little book. So I went to the angel and said to him, give me the little book. And he said to me, now take it and eat it. And it shall make your stomach, your belly, bitter. It will be in your mouth sweet as honey. In other words, what you are going to say, what you are going to learn, how it will taste, will be marvelous, but the result will be very, very awful, because the consequences of God's message lead us to the close of everything, even to the death of the two witnesses. So I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up. Now, what does this all mean? We'll see in a moment. Now, it was in my mouth sweet as honey. As soon as I'd eaten it, my stomach became bitter. So he said to me, what does it mean? The answer is very simple. You must prophesy again. Get that clear? You must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. And there was given me a reed like a rod. Now, he not only had the book, there was given him a reed like a rod. You see now that chapter 12 is not a real introduction. It is only a continuation. So he not only had the book, he was also given a reed and told to measure the temple and the altar. And there is a court without. And he's told how long two witnesses are to speak. Now, let us understand a little something. John is receiving the whole message. John is told that he has work yet to do, and indeed he did. But John is, in a sense, a symbol of those two witnesses. Because he's told to speak, chapter 10, verse 11. And he's to prophesy before peoples and nations and tongues and kings. And the very next thing that happens is the reed that is given to him, measuring a setting, which is hardly anything else but a religious center, and would appear to be in Jerusalem from everything we follow in the 11th chapter. And the two witnesses speak for 3.5 years. They're dead for 3.5 days. The seventh angel sounds just after they rise from the dead. And it's all over when the seventh angel sounds, Jesus Christ returns. Because he comes at the last trumpet. So now we take note of something. Chapter 10 and 11 should not be broken, but are one long chapter. Like chapter 13 should have been broken, because they're two different beasts. Chapter 13 are two insets. Chapters 10 and 11 constitute one inset. There are two parts, but they are immediately related because chapter 11, brethren, has no true introduction. He's passed a book, he eats it. The next thing he's passed is a rod. And you can't mistake the fact that chapter 11 follows chapter 10. And if chapter 11 begins before the day of the Lord, as we have clearly understood it, well then, chapter 10 means that the seven thunders that utter their voices must precede the two witnesses. Now, we begin to understand. When Time Magazine, said that Herbert Armstrong on the world tomorrow thunders the message, they were using the prophetic symbol. When God authorized his message to be conveyed, God did it here symbolically by sending an angel to the little book. When seven thunders were heard, those were seven sequential events, if you please. Like a clap of thunder, and then another clap of thunder, and then another. That's why John was able to hear seven, because he heard them distinctly. Now, sometimes thunder is loud and really shaking, and sometimes its distance is very dim. But it's thunder nevertheless. Now, what, pray tell, would ever be causing these seven thunders to be heard? Well, the answer ought to be very clear when we see the story. If John says you must prophesy again, then what had happened before is a speaking to peoples and nations and tongues and kings. But after the seven thunders are uttered, he's to do it again. In other words, the seven thunders represent, if you please, the messages by the seven churches of God's gospel to the world. And when those seven thunders have uttered their voices, the work of the church is finished in its seven historic phases. But the work is not yet over because we must prophesy again, in this case through two witnesses, before people to nations, tongues, and kings. And if the two witnesses prophesied again, that means that what had happened before must have been a prophecy. Therefore, the word prophecy means preaching. Therefore, the seven thunders were the preaching of the seven churches. Because this is God's message. It's the only group of people that have ever had the true message of God. Now, it isn't seven different contradictory messages. It's God's messages. God's message, pardon me, sounded seven different times historically. It began with the sons of thunder, who were John and James. That's what they were called. The translation of Boanerges in the New Testament. They were the sons of thunder because when they carried out God's message, it sounded, as far as the world was concerned, it was noise. They didn't really understand it. But it came forth in power, and they still don't get it. Now, there's no question but what the clap of thunder in this age has been far louder than it was in the time of the fifth church of the Sardis era, when thunder was very distant and dim. But nevertheless, we find all over the world, whether you go to Argentina or Chile, the Philippines, Mexico, the Caribbean, or India, there are remnants of the Church of God Seventh Day scattered all over the world. And even the headquarters didn't know about many of these areas in Stanbury, Missouri. But they're there. We met them. Our man in the Philippines, Mr. Arthur Garrell, was an illustration. We have brethren who have come into our fellowship in South America who see this as the living branch. Now, once you recognize that the two witnesses are to do what they do in verse 11 of chapter 10, you know, therefore, that the seven thunders represent the same kind of thing to the era of the seventh period of the seven churches, because the only time seven is anywhere introduced before that would convey such a message, and it is a message from a little book. And that book is what John is told to eat. He's not eating the book of life, and he's not eating some work of men. He's to live by every word of God. That's how the two witnesses understand what they are to do. They have to make the Bible a part of themselves. So should you. Now, had we understood where the 10th chapter fits, that it is, in fact, the introductory part of the inset that we already knew in chapter 11, we could have known before, but we did not know, that the work of the Philadelphia era of the church was not to end as the tribulation begins, but all seven thunders were to sound. Therefore, there was destined to be another period in the history of the church. Now, in this case, there has been no cleavage. It is side by side. But let me tell you, in October 1971, exactly 38 years after the world tomorrow, after Mr. Armstrong's voice began on radio, to the very day, but after 19 years, this work stopped. You don't know that, perhaps. some of you who've been here do know, a remarkable event because of a personal crisis in Ted Armstrong's life, which he has personally, unlike some who stumble and don't pick themselves up. Mr. Armstrong said there will be no more broadcasts made. And there were. That happened during the Feast of Tabernacles in 1971. Now, after crisis in his life, he came to himself spiritually. He has been growing ever since in the job, and we have come in 1972. We've come to a period of time in which the work is continuing just as it always has, God's seventh day.